Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small-batch, artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/Breadbox Media. Experience coffee like never before.
Welcome to Good Things Radio, a lifestyle show about activating your mind, body, and soul to become fully alive. And now, your host, Brooke Taylor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Good Things Radio. Well, hello. This is episode number 192. My name is Brooke Taylor, and wowee, do we have a show for you today covering aid and Advent. So aid, what I mean by that is aid to the church in need, a pontifical charity helping persecuted, I will say helping saving persecuted Christians across the globe. My friend Ed Clancy is the director of outreach for the United States, so he's back with us to give us the latest on what is going on, because you won't hear it many other places. And whether it's Nigeria or North Korea, Latin America, places like Chile and Venezuela, the Middle East, there is a great urgency and need to come alongside our brothers and sisters who risk their lives for the sake of the gospel every day. And on our way to Mass this week, this was our topic of conversation in the car, and I was sharing with the kids some of what you are about to hear. And in fact, I would recommend, and I don't say this often, but it's that important to put this interview on Alexa or whatever speaker you have, like a Bluetooth Bose or the car radio, and let this be a segment heard by your family. And then talk about it. One of the questions that you will hear us touch on today is why the apathy? Why not only is it hard to get these stories covered, entire villages being burned with Christians in Nigeria and girls being kidnapped, but that when they are in the news, people express frustration, outrage, and then the news of the day overshadows any follow-up, any action step. And I think part of it, when we were talking in the car, and what we deduced is that power of experience and encounter. So when you're personally touched by a need or an issue, it comes alive for us, right? My husband, his heart is very much for our veterans. He is a vet himself. He has worked on behalf of veterans. And so he's very acquainted with the needs and their sacrifice. And this is a passion. He will advocate all day long. And then for others, it may be breast cancer. For our family, it's autism. For me, I'm a big supporter of hospice, wanted to be a hospice volunteer because of the experience of my dad dying and just the care I felt, wonderful care he received through that experience. And so we were talking about this as a family and just acknowledging none of us has been persecuted for our faith. And we praise God for that, although I will say it is happening more and more in other ways in the United States if we express our faith and our belief and teachings on morality. But we haven't, I think for most of us, had that encounter where we know what it's like. And so we want to be able to advocate and speak up. And so there is a way that we can have this through the stories we're told. And the episode with Brother Richard, I thought he did such a beautiful job of reminding us of the power of story. And this is how Jesus told, and this is how we as people are able to encounter something, even if we haven't experienced it personally. So deciding for me to run that Jerusalem marathon, half marathon with my son, with Brother John Michael Paul and a few others for the persecuted Christians in Syria was because of an encounter. That was that first trip I had into the Holy Land and understanding what Christians in Bethlehem go through and so much of the Middle East. And so we'll touch on that as well. Just can't wait for you to hear the entire interview, including, and be on the lookout for the end of our conversation, information about Red Ribbon Sunday, and I'll follow up on that at the end of the interview. Let's jump in. Grateful to be joined by Edward Clancy, Outreach Director of Aid to the Church in Need USA, an international pontifical charity that supports persecuted and suffering Christians around the world. Welcome to the program, Ed.
Thank you very much for having me.
You know, the last time we spoke, I was getting ready for the Jerusalem Marathon. My son, a few brothers from the community of St. John, and I think we ended up raising about $2,500 on behalf of ACN. So that's a praise report.
That is a praise report, and thankful that people like you can do this wonderful work, but unfortunately, it's very much needed.
Yes, and we had great teamwork, and at that time, the mission was for Syria. That was our hope, and I know that you're going to get us up to speed on the landscape for that, but it's such an interesting juxtaposition right now as we talk, because Thanksgiving, Christmas, decorations already going up in a lot of places, the best toy lists are coming out, Advent wreaths, and so I just was thinking how blessed we are to freely live our faith so outwardly, to celebrate Christmas, and then we're hit between the eyes that reminder that Christianity in some places nearly extinct. And this isn't to induce guilt, but I think to enliven a sense of urgency. And so in the last few months, ACN has presented the annual report in Rome on persecuted Christians. The location that this was delivered, I thought was significant as well. It was the presentation of this report was at the Basilica in St. Bartholomew in Rome, and that's dedicated to the martyrs. So can we crack this open a little bit?
Oh, we certainly can try. And it would be maybe a multi-day task, but we'll do our best.
That's what I was finding just on touching, just really scratching the surface. The title is called More Persecuted Than Ever, and it focuses on the 20 countries that most poorly treat Christians. North Korea, Eritrea, still the most dangerous. And I'm not sure if people are aware. Why do you think those are the top?
The reasons why are just are different. You have in North Korea, you have a government that is absolutely, excuse the expression, but hell-bent, and I think it's appropriate, on destroying any dissent. And they consider Christianity as a dissent. And so what we do each 2 years is we do a religious freedom report, and then every other year we do what we call Persecuted and Forgotten, which highlights, as you were saying, the most persecuted places for Christians. In this, what we do is we analyze the data, what's happening, the news, what we receive from personal visits and testimonies. Mm-hmm. And so in doing this, we get a real understanding of not only the numbers, but the lives that are touched or affected by what's going on. And so persecution happens in different ways. You know, there's the hard persecution, as in North Korea, and then obviously the things like terrorist attacks and such. And then there are other types of persecution that are much more subtle and not so subtle. I mean, you have situations where businesses can't run because they're owned by Christians, or, you know, children don't get into schools because they have Christian names. And those are the things that keep the Christian community from growing, from thriving, and it's all done with the essential idea of destroying Christianity in those places.
I know we've talked about this before, Ed, where it just seems like either people don't understand or they don't grasp the urgency. There's a priest that's a friend of mine in Africa, Nigeria, and the entire village was set on fire because it was Christian families. And I was so horrified. You just want to shout at the top of your lungs. And I didn't really even see any international headlines about that. Are we getting any better with awareness?
No, we are, but we aren't. I think the issue is that we do see these blips, these things, as far as the coverage. Another one that just happened, I mean, just happened this week in Central African Republic, a bishop was killed, and about 40 others were killed along with him. And now you would think that would be international headlines all over the world.
A bishop.
I don't know. A bishop. Yeah. So when we talk about these things, you know, or we mention them, oftentimes it's exactly that. Nobody knows it. You know, so if we're talking about Nigeria, you were just talking about Nigeria. In 2014 and 15, when ISIS was on its prowl and doing all the destruction in Syria and Iraq, it rightly got headlines. But at the same time, the hardest hit country in the world was Nigeria, with over 200 attacks in that span on Christians, and countless killed. And that's the situation in Nigeria that gets underreported. And I remember when Archbishop Kaigama came to visit, who's now he's going to be the primate of Nigeria eventually. Mm-hmm. But when he came to visit, he says, yeah, it's in the news now, when he talked about the Chibok girls, but it won't be in 2 days.
Yeah.
And that's the problem. The Chibok girls, almost half of them are still enslaved or dead. We don't know.
Wow.
And this is what? 3-4 years later, they're not even thought of. So this is the problem. It's either become so routine that people don't remember it or care about it or have been numb to it, or it's just that it's really not highlighted properly by the general media, and it takes the Christian Catholic media to do something about it.
Yeah. I also wonder, too, if there's such a sense that the world is so Christian that how could Christians really be persecuted? You know, this isn't a real thing, but it really is. They're the most persecuted group. And that doesn't seem to be emphasized as well a lot.
No, it isn't. And, you know, Aid to the Church in Need did a fairly thorough study, and we estimate that about 300 million Christians live in places of active persecution. And that's, you know, 1 in 7 Christians in the world.
It's staggering. And Ed, I also saw just the last week or so that ISIS terrorists killed 2 Armenian priests in northeast Syria. Now, we're talking Middle East, so you think, well, there's been warfare there for so long. But these, in the past, I mean, these are men of God and had at some point been respected. But so, I mean, this was murder.
Yeah, and so there is this constant act of violence against Christians, especially in Iraq and Syria and other places in the Middle East. But in this case, the upper northeast of Syria used to be a very good Christian presence there. About 30% of the population in that region was Christian. And typical of what happened in Nineveh, it was Christian families who came to a place that not necessarily nobody wanted, but wasn't easy to live in and, you know, did something with it and thrived. And so in this northeastern area of Syria, they turned it into a very fertile area. There was good resources and things like that. Of course, now that it's developed and Turkey and Syria are fighting over who controls it, the Christians are coming in the crosshairs. And of course, whether it's the first goal or the second or third goal of these terrorists to kill the Christians, it is always what they do. And so this young, you know, whatever, whoever they were, these terrorists who killed them, they're very brazen. They are unafraid to go into, you know, to a house of God and a man of God and kill someone.
Because they know also the consequence they'll get away with it.
Yeah, and also they're praised within their communities.
Right.
I mean, we have a visitor here from the Philippines, and he is the vicar. And right now, he's the administrator of Jolo, which is a vicariate of southern Philippines. And he said that in some of these communities, these Muslim-dominated communities, when someone dies, they barely recognize them. But if they commit an act of violence and they die in that act of violence to promote, you know, radical Islam, they're given the, you know, a funeral of a king. You know,
yeah.
So it is this desire to, you know, destroy Christianity that extreme Islam has put upon us. And, you know, it's not an invitation that we've offered.
I had heard also with whether it's ISIS or just some of these sectarian sects or just different sects that would pop up, that it also can be money. They want to support their family. So they might switch sides. You know, they'll still be Islamic extremists. But if this one's paying better, I'm going to go over here and fight for them. And in the end, though, it's still the Christians that are targeted. And when you talked about what happened here just in Iraq, another brazen, horrible tragedy was what happened in Sri Lanka that left 253 victims dead on Easter Sunday, those attacks on churches. And I understand that you have one of the priests visiting now from that church?
Well, yeah, from the area of Colombo, which is the sort of the center of Christian Sri Lanka. And so Father Neville Fernando, who's a Franciscan Third Order, is one of the priests that's now responsible within that archdiocese of caring for the victims. So he's a, you know, social worker and he has some background in psychology. And obviously he's a priest, so he has training in spiritual health. And so the idea is to allow these people to recover their lives. And so one of the challenges always for AIDS to the Church in Need is, you know, we do some humanitarian help, but our main focus is the pastoral mission of the church. And because of things like this, we see the value and the necessity of that. The fact that, okay, you can rebuild the buildings, you can maybe, you know, deal with the wounds that people get on their bodies, but what happens to their lives after that? Monsignor Sanyal from the Philippines, he said he was approached by a 6-year-old child, and the 6-year-old child said to him, "Where was Jesus when the bomb went off?" And so he said it like stopped him.
Yeah.
How do you answer that? And he assured the young girl that Jesus is with us always, even in those times.
Yes.
We don't always see him, but we have to trust that. Now, I don't know how that enters her heart, but that is a tough thing to swallow, to hear those words from a child. Where was Jesus when the bomb went off?
That's an important emphasis, because when we worked together and we were raising money and awareness for what was going on in Syria, one of the things that I learned was post-traumatic stress. And yes, you survived, but the trauma that you have sustained obviously is lifelong. In many cases, religious that live and are from the community, they are there to pastorally guide. And it's not just, like you said, the aid, but it is this pastoral care that helps heal the internal wounds that we can't see, from the youngest to the oldest. And you said there's three visiting right now, right? You have a nun as well from Pakistan?
Yes, a nun, Sister Ghazia Akbar, who works with young families, but especially young women in Lahore. And this is an area where at least 600 girls between 9 and 15 in the last 5 years have been abducted, essentially kidnapped, and then forced into marriages, you know, sham marriages. So in Pakistan, what will happen is a young girl needs an escort at all times. You know, you can't send a young girl out on her own, even a group of young girls. There's always a need for these young Christian girls to travel with, you know, some sort of entourage, if you will, for protection.
Yeah.
Because they are targets. And so it happens that a family will get a notice. Your daughter is marrying my son. The wedding is going to be in 2 days. And they go to the police and nothing is done, because they said, no, she's doing it willingly. And the parents have no redress. They have no one to go to other than try to appeal to the church or try to appeal to someone. So that's a type of trauma, losing a child, that it's unimaginable to me, but it happens often. And so this is the life for Christians there.
So how are these girls ransomed? Do they go in and physically take them? How does that even happen, where they become free then, liberated?
It's oftentimes they're not. It's not freed. It's just a matter of they're taken. And
okay.
Sometimes they are freed. It does happen. There are families who mortgage their lives to try to get their children back and, you know, take a young child who's been essentially brutalized and then have to rebuild her life. And again, going back to Archbishop Kaigamba, when he was talking about the Chibok girls, he said, when the news goes away and everybody doesn't care, we will still be here to take care of them and rebuild them. You know, that's the important part of the church. You know,
yeah.
They're not going to be their headlines. They're going to be in the trenches taking care of business.
And you know that they will have a crown of glory in heaven for that. Here on earth, though, I imagine that must be difficult, isolating work. And I know we could talk about this all day. That's the challenge, is our heart rate gets up and we want to do something, we want to act. I want to close by at least touching on Latin America as well, because we talked about Asia, Africa, the Middle East. There's a lot going on now in Bolivia, Chile, Venezuela. Anything happening in terms of your report there you could share?
Well, again, there's always essentially a different reason for the types of persecution that happens. Sometimes it's economic, sometimes it's political, and sometimes it's, you know, theological. In Latin America, it seems to be much more political. It seems to be much more driven by drug cartels and human trafficking and things like that. We've had these outbreaks of violence against the church in Chile, because what has started out as a protest against government is now bridged over to the church, because the church is seen as an institution like the government that has too much and doesn't, you know, provide for the poor. And yet
that has something that has made the news. We've seen images of that where they've been looting churches. So that has made headlines.
Yeah. But I mean, in this case, and the same thing now in Venezuela, one of the biggest challenges is the government. The government is not allowing for aid to get through the churches. So even if aid is tried to be provided to, you know, some of these churches do necessary humanitarian work, it's not allowed. There's no way of getting money in through the banking system. And obviously the government controls the ports. So the church is in a very precarious position of wanting to help, but how do you do it? It's a very difficult situation. And it's moving in towards North Korea-like situation, where you're going to be in a country that has barriers from any sort of help.
I think there is where ACN really stands above and beyond. There are a lot of really commendable, beautiful NGOs out there, but you have so many religious and people there planted on the ground who are native of that country, who have been there, who know what the need is. And that's why we want to take this action step and help. And there's a concept that's so beautiful and important called Red Wednesday. I know here it falls in this busy hustle bustle time, and sometimes it can get missed, but internationally it's observed. Can you tell us the concept behind it?
Sure. The color red, the color of martyrdom. You mentioned St. Bartholomew, who died the martyr's death. So what we want to do is highlight for a short period of time in this very busy world, the fact that there are people around the world, as we were just discussing, who suffered persecution. So around the world, the different monuments and churches that are going to be illuminated in red, and people do things with red themes. So here in the United States, the Basilica, the National Basilica, the Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, will be illuminated in red, and we will have, we had this event where we bring in persecuted Christians to tell their testimonies. And this is happening around the world. In the Philippines, it's almost month long, and then the same thing in France, there's a dedicated about a week. London and England, they have some of their churches and prominent buildings which will be illuminated red. And it really has gone, you know, sort of viral. All of the countries that participate in it, it is at least for a few minutes, for a day or two, to highlight the fact. Last year when we had it at the Basilica, I remember going and visiting the Oblates who live right across the street from the Basilica. And one of them came in and said, "Hey, the Basilica is red. What's that all about?" And I was like, wow, it worked.
Oh, yes. And that's what we want in mass, as a human mass of people, to be able to do that. And I know the dates vary, because in the United States, that was on the 22nd. Internationally, it's the 27th, which is tough here because we have it right before Thanksgiving and people, their mind is on turkey or other things, shopping. Yeah. So really, can this be done anytime with a hashtag or awareness? I was even thinking of my children's school and always wanting to do a support or a fun drive before Christmas. Can we do this anytime?
Well, we are working with the Diocese of Brooklyn, which is where we're located, our offices, and they came up with the concept of Red Ribbon Sunday. And they're going to ask that parishes, beginning the first week of Advent, begin decorating with red ribbons their Christmas trees and around the church and homes, and asking families to do the same thing, to hang a red ribbon on your Christmas tree for the purpose of remembering during Advent and Christmas these persecuted Christians. And so if you were to go to redribbonsunday.org,
okay,
you would be able to connect with us. And that will be up and running when the campaign begins in the first week of December.
So
that's
something that
you can do.
And that's great. To our parish priests, we can do that in our own homes, we can do that in our communities, mm-hmm. and parishes, and then can we donate right there? I know ACN has a general website. There's the United States version as well. What's the best way to donate?
Yeah, if you go to, you know, churchinneed.org, to our website, our main page, or even this redribbonsunday.org page, there will be a link through to make donations and offer prayers, both, you know, ask for prayers and to offer prayers. This year, we're focusing on Syria again, unfortunately, because there's, you know, because of the recent activities of Syria and Turkey and some of these terrorist states, there are more Christian families, unfortunately, being put in a position of being pushed out of their homes in need of support.
Okay, that's important. And I'm just thinking, we're going back to the Holy Land and the Tel Aviv Marathon is going on. So you got my wheels turning. We might do that. And I want to ask you, I know you have to run, but before we go, a note of hope. You hear these headlines every day and it must be difficult to absorb this news. What's something that you grab onto that gives you hope?
The testimonies of the religious, of, for example, Sister Gajib Akbar, that's coming here to the United States and visiting. The fact that they joyfully work in these very difficult situations, it is uplifting because it's showing that the Christian testimony, the gospel, is being spread regardless of the conditions. And as Tertullian said about the blood of the martyrs being the seeds of the faith, it's being proven so that this is an amazing church that we are part of that overcomes so many things and doesn't go away no matter what the challenges are.
Amen. That is the highlight takeaway right there. God bless you. Thank you so much for all that you do, Edward. Merry Christmas.
Thank you. God bless you, too. And I hope everyone has a wonderful Advent and Christmas.
You, too. Thank you again to Edward Clancy. And that link, by the way, is live. I just checked redribbonsunday.org, and it takes you to churchinneed.org. But there you can fund a project, explore the need, share it with your pastor, share it with your community, your friends, your family. And you can read more about the report that he also referenced in our segment as well. So please spread the word. Again, that is redribbonsunday.org. And here we are again, another Advent 2019, never to come around again. And it's impossible to not stop and think about all that happens in a year. Every year, that for me is when I put the ornaments on the tree and I look at all the ornaments handmade by the kids over the years. I cry a little bit. I think about what will next year bring. I know for us last year, my son Gabe was a high school senior. Now, a year later, he is an Army soldier. He's still a student at the Fire Academy. But, you know, in ways big and small, we see that time has brought about new changes. And in 1 year, you know, our dog Rocky died. That was really tough for us. There's been changes in our church, a lot going on since even a year ago, changes in our country. So there's always that mix of good and bad, of the roses and the thorns. Last year, Choose Hope had just come out, and a big thanks to you. I feel like I haven't even been able to thank you enough. And here we are all at, you know, at the year anniversary. And this year, preparing for Arise 2020, preparing for two pilgrimages to the Holy Land and to Israel, which, by the way, I have to divert and share this. I just discovered that my parish priest will be joining us on the trip to the Holy Land as well. If you would have been there, it was just one of those moments where I couldn't believe we were having dinner with Father Jay Clark. So Father Jay, Monsignor Jay Clark, is our spiritual director for the trip to Ireland. He's our priest on that trip. But when we had dinner recently, he was asking how it was going for the Holy Land, the pilgrimage, just planning and getting all the details together. And I told him about our group, and he said, well, how would you like to have one more? And I just sat there and I said, Father, are you saying what I think you're saying? And he said, yeah, I think I want to go. I'm feeling called. So just things like that are the best. But not every year is like that. Some years are tough. I was just talking to my friend Linda Isaiah, her husband's birthday falling right before Thanksgiving, the day he died, just a week or so before Christmas, and how this is such a difficult year. And in the first year, maybe even the first 2 years, you're almost in a fog. And now this tough reality is here. And so for all of us, every year, it's an opportunity we know to grab hold to what God is saying here and now as we embark on this beginning. It's not an end. I remember talking about that last year as we started Advent. We think about the end of the year. You hear these end of the year closeouts and looking forward to New Year. But in our church, the new year has just begun. It's starting now. And this is a beginning as we wait for the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ. And one of the things that we've talked about before is that our Orthodox brothers and sisters have 40 days of Advent, just like Lent, to prepare, fast, give alms, pray. And so I've been exploring the fasting component lately because it's a spiritual discipline that I haven't done a whole lot outside of like our penitential obligations. And so it's one of the themes that I want to offer as we begin Advent, to know for us, as it was for centuries, practiced by believers all over the world for its potency. On next week's show, you're going to hear about something called Fiat 90. It is a beautiful devotion that a group of our Good Things Radio listeners have started, and they are going to share with you. I want to do this. I'm thinking, you guys, I didn't even know you were doing this, and they talk about it. But one of the things that they talk about as we look at fasting, and fasting means different things in different ways. Maybe in your family, you have a desert day where you fast in the evening from noise, music, technology, devices, even in some cases, if it's possible, which I know it's not always. But speaking, you know, these are different creative ways that you can fast. One way in particular that I think it's going to be Vicky that shares with us about Fiat 90 that you can fast is the snooze button. Fasting from the snooze button. I've heard about this before, and she's going to explain it as well. But one of the things, I love Catholic Gentlemen. If you've never gone on that website or seen their inspirational posters and different things online, it's so worth checking out. But there's a great article from the Catholic Gentleman entitled The First Battle of the Day. And the writer says, the first thing in the morning, we are faced with a battle. Our alarm goes off, and we have a choice. We can either hit snooze or get out of bed immediately. I have a confession to make. For most of my life, I have hit the snooze button and dozed off again, sometimes even more than once. The irony is, I almost always regret my laziness. When I oversleep, my head feels like it's filled with cement, my eyelids feel as though they are made of lead, and my thoughts are sluggish. It takes a long time to fully shake the feeling of drowsiness, and in many ways, my day is off to a bad start. Now, they call it, he calls it, or rather, St. Jose Maria Escrivá calls it, the heroic minute. And he talks about this very thing. St. Jose Maria Escrivá says the heroic minute is the time fixed for getting up without hesitation. Here you have a mortification that strengthens your will and does no harm to your body. Right on cue. Can you turn that off?
Alexa.
I don't think that we could have possibly coordinated anything better. The timing of that. Okay, I have to tell you this. Normally, I would cut that out of post-production here. But my son, since he has been home, has moved down to the basement, and my studio and his room are shared space at the moment. And so right during this time, he has just bought an Alexa, and she is waking him up with the alarm. So thank you for that, Alexa. Now I feel really weird because you always hear the creepiness of how online is listening. So perhaps that's some sort of anecdotal case in point. But nevertheless, thank you for that supplemental exclamation point. Alexa.
Come, my long expected Jesus, born to set thy people free from my fears.
If with God's help you conquer yourself, you will be well ahead for the rest of the day. It's so discouraging to find oneself beaten at the first skirmish. And again, we can all recognize that. So just a challenge for this Advent and some tips with how to do it. First, pray about it. It might sound silly to pray about waking up in the morning, but nothing is too small to bring to our Lord. If this is an area you struggle with, it is an area that I struggle with, and our will is weak in this area, well, then we need grace to do even the smallest act. And that could be getting up when the alarm goes off the very first time, and pray that we may have the strength to do that. Second, don't argue with yourself. If we don't get up right away, often it's because we rationalize a few more minutes of sleep. Oh, just 5 more minutes, I'll get up. Oh, especially I think when it's cold, like this time of year, it's so easy to do that. But even the smallest delay, the smallest rationalization can mean you end up sleeping way longer than you intended. So give yourself no quarter, no room to argue with yourself, and then move your alarm. You've heard this trick before. I remember even seeing, too, you can have alarms that are like puzzles, like the top of the alarm has a little puzzle on it, and when it goes off, the puzzle shoots up, and you have to put it together in order to turn the alarm back off. I don't think that would work for me, but this is a little thing. Where is your alarm in the room? This can make a big difference. If it's on the other side of the room and you have to get up to shut it off, well, then you know you're far more likely to get up right away. You're already walking and alert, and so it's much easier than if you just have to reach over with your hand and hit the button. So just a small way, and we'll get into more specific ways that you can fast on our next program. And on that note, before we wrap up, I want to share something that's been going around. A listener sent it to me. I've sent it to friends. 4 exorcists urging a day of fasting, prayer, and reparation for December 6th. So you can put this on your calendar. The National Catholic Register is where you can find the source of this. I'll also link it up on the show notes. But just a brief snippet of the article. It says 4 exorcists have issued a joint statement asking Catholics worldwide to dedicate December 6th as a day of fasting, prayer, and reparation. And of course, that's the Feast of St. Nicholas. Quote, for the purpose of driving out any diabolic influence within the church that has been gained as a result of recent events. The exorcists, who have requested anonymity due to the sensitivity of their ministries, of course, cited in a particular way the controversy that took place during the recent Pan-Amazon Synod, when statues purportedly of Pachamama, a goddess worshipped by indigenous Andeans, were incorporated into various synod events. Quote, these events bring home the reality that we are in spiritual warfare. And the statement goes on to say, and that warfare is happening within the church itself. Now, studying history, studying the church, this is nothing new. But through time, the faithful have always responded through prayer, through fasting, through reparation, and that's what we are being asked to participate in as well. And so that specifically means say the rosary, take on some form of penance, such as fasting, abstinence, other forms of mortification, offer the prayers to the Sacred Heart, and they actually list those prayers, act of consecration of the human race to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, a reparation to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And so I will link that up. All of those resources are right there on that National Catholic Register article, and you can write it on your calendar as well for December 6th. Thank you again to my guest, Edward Clancy from Aid to the Church in Need. That website is linked up for you, but again, please share and spread the word. RedRibbonSunday.org is how you can find out more information. Also, the tickets are on sale for our Arise Good Things Radio Retreat. We had a wonderful meeting with our team a few weeks ago. Betty said, you know, my kids are always asking me, what can they get me for Christmas? And she said, this is such a great gift for the woman who doesn't never know what to say when someone says, what can I get you as a gift? And she said, what a great suggestion to have a couple of the kids go in on it. This is an experience. It comes with a massage. It comes with the relaxation and the sacraments and the community and all the things rolled up into one weekend that we would hope for. And I just love that idea. And we are going to be offering some goodies for you as well. If you're looking into that, maybe you want to gift it for a friend. And you know, the website is linked up too, and you can get the event details on the Eventbrite page, but we still have tickets remaining. Hope that you'll join us next June 2024 Arise. A big, big thank you to my trusty producer, Mark Cumming, for his dynamic skills and quick work. Mark is a producer extraordinaire and wears many hats. So for any audio, video needs you may have, check him out at cumminghomestudio.com. Until next time, friends, God bless you.
Good Things Radio is a production of St. Gabriel Media. Adventure, encounter, evangelize. To find out more, or to schedule Brooke to speak to your group or parish, visit brooketaylor.us. That's brooketaylor.us. Good Things Radio is a production of Cumming Home Studios, produced by Mark Cumming. Find out more at www.cumminghomestudio.com.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
It's so much more than just a profile picture. At Catholic Singles, our platform offers you many opportunities to get to know the person behind the picture. Sign up today at catholicsingles.com.
Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.